Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
With the very sad news that Whitney Houston has passed away at the age of 48, it's only right that we devote this week's entire show to her. She's influenced so many people around the world that we want to honor her. First up, we speak with director and choreographer Sean Cheeseman, who worked with Whitney on The Bodyguard in 1992, and who was in the studio with her when she recorded her hit song, I Will Always Love You. We then speak with CNN movie critic Gray Drake about Whitney's illustrious movie career and her upcoming last movie, Sparkle.
Capture your need for sound.
So many people around the world are having a very tough time coming to grips with the fact that the voice, Whitney Houston, is no longer with us. Because she was such a loved person, it's only fitting that we pay tribute to someone who brought so much joy to the world. Someone who knew her very well was world-renowned choreographer and director Sean Cheeseman, who worked with her on her very famous movie, The Bodyguard, back in 1992. Sean, thank you for joining us again on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Sean, you know, I have to ask you, because I think it's almost like the same situation as when Michael died. Everyone remembers where they were when they got the news. So where were you when you heard the news that Whitney had passed, and how did you actually find out?
Well, actually, I'm here in Calgary because I came to celebrate my dad's 80th birthday, and I was just around on Skyping with a friend, and a Facebook message came in that Whitney died, and I thought it was a hoax. I didn't believe it. So I searched the news programs and then found it was true.
When you actually were able to confirm, you know, off these news programs that she had indeed passed, what happened to you immediately? Did you kind of go into shock?
Yeah, it was almost the same feeling I had when Michael died. It was just that feeling of being of shock and numb, and then a flood of memories all coming at once.
Can you sort of share some of those memories? Because I wanted to ask you, you know, you did get to work with her. How did you sort of come to meet her and work with Whitney, you know, all those years ago?
Well, I was hired to be a choreographer on the movie The Bodyguard, and then, you know, auditioned for the part of the choreographer, Rory, in the movie. So my first meeting with Whitney was actually the first rehearsal for the acting scene with her and Kevin Costner that was at the beginning of the movie, and that was my first meeting, and immediately we just kind of took to each other.
And then how did things sort of go on from there? Like you were working with her behind the scenes, you know, on the movie. What was that like, getting to know Whitney Houston away from the glare of, you know, her being on stage?
I mean, it was really a nice feeling because, you know, she was a humongous star at that time, and I was truly a big fan. And you know, you always hear about these famous divas and they're going to have diva attitudes. And she was such a professional and she was so down to earth. And I don't know, because we were both so young at the time, that we really took to each other, and being both people of color, that we just immediately took to each other. And working with her was like butter. It was so easy.
And what was it like to be on set with her when the cameras were actually rolling?
Well, that was interesting to watch her, because I remember her, you know, this was her first movie. I think people forget that. And so she was very nervous about making a good impression, and she would be relentlessly going over her lines. And Kevin Costner was very accommodating in helping her out. He just came off two big Oscar wins. So it was a lot of pressure on her. You know, Madonna was up for this part.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Madonna was up for the part of the bodyguard, and Whitney got it over Madonna.
Something I think that people always wonder about Whitney, again, because you mentioned the word earlier, diva, and I think some people think that Whitney is all, you know, always had a bunch of people around her and sort of had that entourage. When you were with her on set, did she really have an entourage, or it seemed like she was more sort of down to earth than having all these people?
Yeah, she didn't have an entourage, and I feel a lot of times with some people, the entourage or their comfort zone or their family, their people, that make them feel at ease. It's their comfort zone. And she had her very good friend, Robin, who was like her best friend since high school. And that was her entourage.
Wow, that's amazing to know that it wasn't, you know, 19 people sort of with her behind the scenes. And as you said, this was her first movie. What was it like to watch her, you know, who had been already so successful in the 80s, as a performer, as a vocalist, what was it like to watch her, I suppose, learn this new craft?
I mean, it was very humbling because it made me, you know, even though I had been working in this business, famous people are famous people, and you always have them on this high pedestal. And seeing how nervous she was and how hard she was working, it really brought her back down to earth, and it made you just look at her as another person as opposed to Whitney Houston, the star.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is choreographer and director Sean Cheeseman, who has worked with Whitney Houston in the past. Sean, you had the chance to work with both Michael and Whitney. Did they have similar sort of work ethics when they were rehearsing and then, you know, performing? They both seem to be consummate professionals to the outside world.
Yeah, I feel that, you know, in my experience, my 24 years experience of this business, the ones who are the real talents, the real stars, are the ones who never complain about rehearsing and working. And they never did.
And they never did. That's amazing to know. And, you know, you've worked with so many amazing people like Michael, obviously Whitney, Tina, Janet Jackson. What set Whitney apart from those other celebrities that I've just mentioned?
Well, I think their talent, even though they were all musical people, they were all different in so many ways. I think with Whitney, she definitely honed her talent from the church. She came from a very religious background, and it was very from a gospel background, and that's where her talent was developed, and through her family. So that's how I see she's different from the others, is that she just started out more in the humbles of the church and church singing.
Now, you know, you got to be around Whitney, you know, behind the scenes. What do most of us not know about the real Whitney Houston as opposed to the performer that we see on stage with all the glitz and the glam?
That she was a real comedian. She was a homegirl from Newark, New Jersey, and was really, really funny. And used to love to tell her funny stories throughout life. And took everything with a grain of salt and a little sarcastic smile. She was hilarious.
And when, you know, because I've heard that you were able to actually attend her wedding when she married Bobby Brown, that you were invited to the festivities. What was it like to actually be invited to such a star-studded affair and to actually be there and see her, you know, on her big day?
It was, I mean, the whole thing was, I was so honored when I got the invitation, and I still have the invitation to this day. I was just really honored, and, you know, it was my first time going to anything big that way, and trying to find the suit to buy and the security we had to go through to get, because it was at her house in New Jersey. It was everything that I imagined and more. So being around all those famous people, I always said I felt like I was the only person I didn't know. There was so many famous people there that it was just, you know, it was amazing.
Can you describe the day, like you know, you went to New Jersey and you arrived and just what happened?
Well, I flew to New York, went to New Jersey, hired a car, had to go through so many check stops of security, and then walking on the grounds of her house with the pool that's diamond studded with her initials and seeing just famous people, and then Whitney standing there looking like a dream and just beaming with light, and then the night just being full of festivities, and we were just partying all night, and I remember the DJs were CNC Music Factory guys, and it was just a ball of fun.
And what table did you sit at? Like, who were you sitting with, Sean?
Some famous people. I was with Dick Clark, Ella Reid, Babyface, Gloria Estefan. Oh, there's so many.
And being at that wedding with all these, you know, other celebrities, what was the tone of the wedding like? Like, was all these other celebrities who were, you know, in their own right, were used to being the star of the show? What was their feelings towards Whitney and Bobby in that moment?
I think everybody was just really enjoying the festivities because she was so happy. I mean, during the filming of The Bodyguard, whenever we were getting a day off, she was always so excited because that was when she was going to meet Bobby. Bobby was coming. She was really like a schoolgirl in love.
Wow. And I actually just finished watching some tape of her when she did the big Oprah interview a few years ago. And it was interesting to watch. And obviously you could speak on this because you saw her in that time of the intense love, I guess. As she was talking to Oprah, she just mentioned that Bobby was her drug. Is that something that you would concur?
Yeah, I really feel that, you know, I don't know if she was her first love, but the way she had acted was like it was her first love. I think there was definitely a connection between the two of them that was profound that nobody else but them can describe. And maybe that's why it was so volatile in the end, but there was definitely some love there. And they lasted a long time for as long, celebrity, as far as celebrity weddings go.
In that moment, in that time of you being at the wedding and you know, probably the months surrounding that, did you ever question that things would have sort of unraveled in such a volatile way? Like, I'm sure at the wedding, did you think this was going to be forever for her?
Well, I mean, before I met Whitney and heard she was dating Bobby Brown, the rumor at that time, everybody was in shock that Whitney Houston, the diva, was dating Bobby Brown, the pop star boy group. Because their images were so different. Whitney was really sold. This was really elegant, high-class performer, which she was. But Whitney was also a down-to-earth girl from Newark, New Jersey, which that's where she identified with Bobby. So once I got to know her, I totally got why they fell in love.
I think that's fascinating, Sean, and thank you for explaining that, because I think still to this day, a lot of people could not understand, like you said, this high-class, elegant lady, the persona that we all see on stage, was dating this R&B hot stud.
Right. Yeah, no, they came from, I think, similar backgrounds. He definitely, he was definitely her people, as you say, and they really connected on that level, and I think it was just the media's personas that made it seem it wasn't that way.
Now, in the years since her marriage and sort of seeing her go through her struggles with addiction, did you always sort of think that she would turn it around, or did you actually fear that maybe she would die too soon, just like Michael Jackson?
I never thought she would have been the one to die too soon. I thought for sure she would have turned it around, and I thought she had been turning it around. And I felt this year was the year. Like, things were finally coming in a corner. I mean, it's been a few years now that she's been really trying, and I thought she really had beaten her demons. And I think most of them she probably had. I don't know what has happened, but I always thought that would be the past for her.
And can you explain what you mean by this being her year, by 2012 being her year?
Well, for one, I feel like everything's almost like full circle. I know it's 20 years ago we filmed The Bodyguard. They're also going to do a Broadway version of the movie this year. She was just in the remake of a musical, Sparkle. She was doing a new album, and there was also talks for her doing a remake of Waiting to Exhale, doing a sequel to Waiting to Exhale.
So she had a lot lined up.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff on her plate this year.
And Sean, were you ever in her presence when she was recording?
Yes, I'm one of the lucky few, and I wish I had back in those days, we had little phones with cameras.
Yeah.
So definitely would have been there, like trying to keep a tape of this. But yeah, I lucked out. I was there when she was filming, recording part of I Have Nothing, which is from the soundtrack, and of course her infamous I Will Always Love You.
What was that like, Sean, to be there for that recording? And where did that actually take place?
It was first of all, where it was being recorded was at the Warner Brothers lot, where they had a whole orchestra there, where it used to be all the old-time musicals used to be recorded. So a lot of famous people had gone through that booth, those recording booths. So for me, being a choreographer, that alone was amazing, because all these MGM musicals and stuff were made there. And then being there and hearing the voice singing and hearing her talk to the producer and trying different takes was unbelievable, especially for me. I thought every take was brilliant.
Was she tough on herself in the studio, Sean?
I don't know if she was tough on herself, but she definitely knew what she was doing. She definitely knew when something was right or something wasn't wrong. Definitely knew her craft.
That's amazing, because I think it's important for her fans to know that, because I think some people, kind of like I think the way that Celine Dion is viewed sometimes, is that, you know, they're just sort of in there and they just sing whatever they're told. So I think it's great to know that she really did have a hand in how her career went forth.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, myself included, when you know your craft, you know, you have a strong opinion because you know it. And she knew when something was good, when something wasn't bad, or when she felt the take was good or when she felt the take wasn't bad.
Joining us on the show right now is choreographer and director Sean Cheeseman, who worked with Whitney Houston. Sean, you know, you're a choreographer. Whitney was known for her voice, but I understand she actually did have a bit of a dance background. What was it like to actually choreograph these moves for her, you know, for The Bodyguard?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, everybody at the time was thinking Whitney wasn't a mover, and they even wanted to have a dance double for her. And I went in the studio and we just started playing around, and I was like, wait a minute, you're good and you're a really good mover. And she was like, yeah, you know, I've taken 7 years of ballet. But she knew what she was about. She goes, people don't come to see me dance, they come to hear me sing.
That's amazing that she would even know that. And I remember actually seeing her, I think it was in 91, when she was on the Arsenio Hall show, when she performed I'm Your Baby Tonight. And I remember her busting a groove then. And I was actually shocked, because knowing from the 80s that she had been, you know, mostly standing there and just sort of grooving. But then to see her do these choreographed dance moves was amazing.
Right. Yeah, she could. But, you know, like, you know, if you are really going to be able to sing at your full power and technically perfect, you cannot be kicking your leg and turning around and jumping on the floor. That's impossible. And she knew her songs were torch songs, so there was no way you could get her doing a pirouette and trying to hold that note.
As someone who, you know, knew her, Sean, how do you think Whitney would have felt about how the Grammy Awards honored her with having Jennifer Hudson sing her biggest hit, I Will Always Love You, during the ceremony?
I think she was honored by that and would have felt very humbled by it. And she, you know, she was always a mentor to a lot of up and coming young female singers, and I think she would have just been very grateful.
Are you concerned for her daughter, Bobby Christina? Like, do you think that she has enough family support to make it through these next several months, which are obviously going to be very, very difficult for her?
She is the one that immediately, when I really realized that Whitney had died, that I really thought about. Yeah, I hope so. I hope she's just surrounded by love, and I'm sure she is, because they came from a very close-knit family and a very spiritual family. So I think she's going to have a lot of support, but it's going to be very hard for her because she's just lost her mom.
And as someone who is a fan, Sean, because I know that you're definitely a fan of Whitney, along with working with her and her being a colleague, do you hope, because I know when Michael passed away, a lot of people were very concerned about the fact that, you know, the estate might be releasing unreleased songs. As a fan and someone who worked with her, do you actually hope to hear maybe some songs that she's worked on that maybe her audience hasn't heard yet? Do you hope that we get to hear this stuff in the coming years, maybe?
Yeah, I'd rather that, because, you know, I've been asked to do a lot of interviews since her death, and same with Michael. And the reason why I always say yes is I want to honor them the way I can and talk about their talent more than their struggles. And as a fan, I loved her talent. So if there's anything that was back there that hasn't been released, yes, I would love to hear it. I've been watching old things on YouTube of her first performances as a little girl. It's been amazing.
Sean, something that I find interesting is the fact that so many people are so devastated by her loss. I mean, I don't even know Whitney personally, and I've been bummed since the news has come out. And I've spoken with several people, whether they're in the industry, in the entertainment industry or not, just regular folks. And the prevailing sort of thought process is that everyone is just so sad that Whitney is now gone.
Yeah, I feel it's because, you know, when you see, for one, when somebody struggles, and this can be anybody, it doesn't have to be anybody famous, but mm-hmm. somebody that's touched you in some way, that you see them struggle and see them coming through it, it's sad when it's all of a sudden cut short.
Yes, very, very.
And because she touched us with her songs and her music, it, you know, it just makes us feel like we knew her personally.
And to her fans, Sean, that are listening right now, what do you say to them? What do you want them to hold on to about Whitney as we, you know, sadly have to move forward without her?
A few things. One is that to really always remember and appreciate the talent, the God-given talent that she had, and that she loved doing what she did so well, and that she was also a real person. She was not just Whitney the star. She was Whitney the homegirl, the girl that just used to love to kick her shoes off and have a good laugh.
And for Sean Cheeseman, what will you remember for yourself of your friend Whitney Houston?
I feel I will remember her loyalty and her laughter.
That's amazing. Sean, I really appreciate you taking the time. I know this has to be a very difficult time, so thank you for sharing your memories of Whitney with us.
Thank you very much.
That's world-renowned choreographer and director Sean Cheeseman. Whitney Houston's tragic death has been felt around the world. Her fans and fellow celebrities are very upset, and even critics who have been hard on her in the last decade or so have actually softened and realized that with her passing, a lot of talent has just left the planet. Apart from her standout career as an amazing vocalist and pop star, Whitney also had a career in the movies. No one can deny her success with 1992's The Bodyguard. To talk about what she brought to the silver screen and her yet-to-be-released final film, Sparkle, is CNN and Fandango.com's movie critic Gray Drake. Gray, welcome to The Kelly Alexander Show.
Hello, Kelly. It's good to be back, but man, what a horrible reason.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, Gray, just like with the passing of Michael Jackson, I think everyone remembers where they were, you know, when that happened. So I have to ask you, where were you when you heard that Whitney had passed away, and how did you actually find out?
You know, I was actually just about a mile away from the Beverly Hills, and I just got done doing an interview for an upcoming film, and I was in an elevator with a whole bunch of journalists. And there was one guy in the corner of the elevator that was already there. And the doors close, everyone's quiet, and he just looks at us and he says, "Hey, you guys, Whitney Houston just died." And everybody in the elevator turns and looks at him, and nobody knows this guy. And we all go, and that I remember saying to him, "That has to be a lie. It has to be a Twitter rumor. It can't be true because she's so young." And he was like, "You know, I don't have AP confirmation on it yet. But that's what I heard." And by the time that we had gotten out of the elevator and we're all waiting for our cars, everybody's phone lit up with all of the news services sending out the actual news that she had passed away. And everybody was just shocked.
And
horrible.
Were you, you know, I know what the immediate sort of shock, because I think everyone felt that shock. But if you take a step back, Ray, if I ask you, were you kind of caught off guard, I guess I'll ask you, and because I think some people think that this was something that we should have all seen coming.
Well, I think that although no kind of toxicology reports have come out yet, as of the time of this interview, who's to say what the cause was, but I think that everyone immediately leapt to the same conclusion, which is that she must have been struggling again in private, and then and finally lost this battle. And I mean, and the thing about when someone dies like this, and someone that has affected your life, well, and I'll speak for myself. I mean, somebody that's affected my life as much as she has, both an actress and a singer, and just as an enormous talent in this world, I want to point a finger, and good Lord, am I angry at Bobby Brown. Oh, I just got, oh God, it's an unfair thing to say, but I feel like she would be fine if she hadn't chosen that one particular path. And who'd say if that's true or not? This sucks, man. This is the worst.
Well, I'm glad you actually spoke out about Bobby, because I think that's what everyone is thinking. I think a lot of us are thinking if she hadn't have chosen that path, that route, that entourage of hanging out with him and his fellow people that he had going on, that maybe this wouldn't have happened. And I want to ask you as well, you know, you are in Los Angeles. You've been obviously in the movie industry and covering it. With Whitney as a person and being in these circles, in these movie circles, what would, you know, the regular person not know about Whitney? Like, what was the description that you could give of Whitney in industry circles, you know, in the movies?
You know, it's kind of hard to say what at this point people don't know about her, because her living such a public life is one of the reasons where, you know, that she has ended up this way. I think that has certainly, you know, made her struggle a lot harder. And so we know a lot about her, but the thing that I have been enjoying remembering about her, because I mean, to be honest, I haven't thought about Whitney Houston specifically for a while. She's been out of the public eye. She's just planning her comeback, and she's going to be in an upcoming film this year. I mean, this was going to be a huge year for her. The thing that I've enjoyed the most is just looking at how she chose to contribute to art. Aside from her singing, I was thinking about her TV movie that she made, the Cinderella film, the Rodgers and Hammerstein musical that she did with Brandy. And I don't know that a lot of people really paid a lot of attention to it, but that it was kind of a groundbreaking movie, especially for TV, where the cast was interracial, and, you know, it was Whitney Houston singing Rodgers and Hammerstein. That was just, it was really like it brought a smile to my face to think about it.
That's amazing. And, you know, as you mentioned earlier and I mentioned earlier, everyone knew Whitney or got to know Whitney because of The Voice. But then, you know, she did launch into The Bodyguard in 92. Now, at that time, do you think it was a cognizant decision on her part or her team's part to attach herself to that movie because she ended up playing a very familiar role, a singer?
Absolutely. I think that because that was her first film and she had been, you know, she had been waiting to kind of get into the movie business, and this script crossed their path. And I'm sure that all of the brilliant people behind her, you know, herself included, figured that this would be a really good place to start. Because,
right.
You know, it's when in doubt, be a modified version of yourself. And not everyone can pull that off, but somebody as talented as Whitney, she can do anything. And The Bodyguard was an unforgettable movie. It was an unforgettable soundtrack, too, with songs. I Will Always Love You was the number one song in every country at the same time.
It was incredible that year. Like, you couldn't go anywhere without hearing that song or knowing about the movie.
I know, and back in 92, it was such a huge deal, and that was definitely her highest grossing film of all time. That made over $120 million, and it's still a movie that people talk about today, and so many of those songs off that soundtrack were spectacular, and it was just a case of the planets aligning, every element being the perfect thing at that moment. And the film is, I mean, I think it was such a fantastic role for Kevin Costner too, who wasn't really seen that way. And for the two of them to be in this film together, and oh God, it was just magic. I remember how magical it was, and it was so long ago.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the magic, because I was reading actually some reviews of that film, you know, in knowing that I was going to talk to you. And it seemed like there was some polar views about that film at the time. Like, there was either people who really liked it, like critics who really liked it, or thought that it was ridiculously, I think one guy said it was like cardboard, like watching these two characters trying to meld, but not. And also meaning that the two actors who were playing Whitney and Kevin, you know, it didn't come across that they were wanting each other in the film, that they were two standout celebrities in two different genres, and they couldn't bring it together. I read that statement and was kind of shocked by it.
Yeah, actually, I'm not surprised in those responses, though, because although I wasn't writing reviews at the time, and was, I consider myself to be like more of that pure-hearted moviegoer at that time, like where movies always excited me. It's something that really goes away, I think, the more movies that you see. In order to be a critic, you've got to love movies. That's a misconception that a lot of people have. They think that critics hate pictures, and they're wrong. But I do think that the more films that you see, the more that you see through them.
Okay.
And so a movie like The Bodyguard, I think, would definitely be the kind of movie that a critic who's working all the time and seeing everything just might not buy. For the rest of us, though, I feel like for a normal, everyday person that maybe only got to the movies every once in a while, seeing the two of them together, two of the biggest stars at that time, together in a film where you also got to hear Whitney's beautiful voice singing, it's like, you just couldn't get better than that in 92. That's my memory of it.
Joining us on the show is Gray Drake, movie critic for CNN and Fandango.com. Gray, after the success of The Bodyguard, you know, she continued to sort of dip her feet more into the film world. 95, Waiting to Exhale. What did you feel about that film?
Oh, Waiting to Exhale. Oh, that was such a good movie. This is, like, Terry McMillan, I think, is one of her better novels. And the thing that worked about this movie for me then, and still to this day, even I just rewatched it recently, is that it's so universal. You've got these unbelievable actresses, like Whitney, of course, but she's got backup from Angela Bassett and Loretta Devine, two outstanding performers who are still making good movies today. All of these women have a very distinctive voice. It's about like the Black female experience and what these women are doing to pick up their lives. But at the same time, like, it was so universal and it was just about people that it's not a balance that movies can often strike. Usually, movies are so, they have such kind of an exclusive tone about them that they leave a lot of people out. And so Waiting to Exhale was really unique. Having Whitney Houston in the movie was a smart move, I think, because she tended to bring in all kinds of viewers. And that was one of the things about The Bodyguard that was also a smart choice, because at the time, having an interracial relationship could have really been explosive. I mean, in history, you can probably name the movies on a couple different hands, you know, which ones have had interracial relationships. But because it was Whitney Houston, she brought in tons of people that might not have seen the movie otherwise, and this just happened to be a really good one for her. Good scripts she was picking. Waiting to Exhale was just 3 years after The Bodyguard.
Mm-hmm. And moving along, The Preacher's Wife with Denzel Washington, 1996.
Yes, The Preacher's Wife. Now, this is the lowest grossing of those films, and it just came out a year after Waiting to Exhale. And I think that it didn't have nearly the background behind it to buoy up its success. And it was a remake as well, but this is like early Denzel, when Denzel was really, really getting good, and it had everybody's attention. And just yet another opportunity for her to release a fantastic song on the soundtrack and just be charming and beautiful. And I'm a huge fan, in mm-hmm. case you couldn't tell.
That's all good.
That's why, like, the, you know, going back through her filmography, you know, when I finally got home on Saturday night, by the way, the traffic around the Beverly Hilton was insane with people that were trying to get there. I finally came home and was just kind of watching YouTube videos, and I was going through all of her clips online and looking at these films, and she's responsible for bringing me a lot of joy in my life. And I think the same goes for so many people in America, and that's why everybody's flipping out. This is a huge loss.
A huge loss. And it's even shocking now, days later after her death, to be talking about this with you. Like, it's weird. Like, with Michael, again, it was shocking, but I think we all knew he was in trouble. You know, not knowing that was going to be the end, especially because he was launching his own comeback, and I think that comeback would have worked very well for him. But you always knew he always looked so frail. And I remember the funny thing is that the day before she passed away, I was looking at some stuff on TMZ, and there's, you know, that feature that they do where they call it good genes or good docs. And they had a picture of her from, I think it was 86, and then a picture from her from the Thursday before she passed away at a pre-Grammy party. And I remember telling myself, looking at that picture, going, oh my God, she looks great. This is the first time I've seen her not looking gaunt and super thin and gross. Like, she actually seemed a bit fuller. She seemed happy. So I was like, wow, maybe this is it. So to be talking to you about her death is very surreal. And I think a lot of people are feeling the loss. And then especially in the movie community now, and the fact that she had just done this movie Sparkle with Jordan Sparks, which I understand probably would have launched her back into mainstream popularity.
She was on the brink of doing something big and coming back. And I'm not sure if that means that she had finally gotten her life together and if her rehab had taken hold. I have heard reports that she had just gone through another rehab stint in May of 2011. And, I mean, part of the reason that this is so shocking is just because we hadn't heard from her. And she was out of the spotlight, which is almost like a no news is good news thing. And for people that kind of have had their eye on this remake, you know, Sparkle, people are really excited about it. Jordan Sparks is in it. You've got CeeLo and Mike Epps and Derek Luke and all these great actors. And it's going to be a really fun remake. It's going to be great to watch. And to see Whitney, you know, come back would be everyone's wishes kind of realized. Because I think everybody's always been on Whitney's side. I think that she has such enormous public support. I've never heard anyone say an unkind word about her because her talent was so far-reaching. And she really brought a lot of that brightness and a lot of that spark to her roles. Even if you didn't think the movies were that great, she's really special. She was such a special talent. And I keep ending up in the same place, which is absolutely heartbreaking. There was for the footage of her singing at the pre-Grammy party that same Thursday. That was apparently her last performance. I believe she was singing Jesus Loves Me, and she's doing great, and everybody's going crazy, and it's you could just tell from the amount of support in the room with her that had she lived to see this movie come out, I mean, it could have been a whole new life for her.
Joining us on the show is Gray Drake, movie critic for CNN and Fandango.com. Gray, can you give us a bit of an idea what the movie Sparkle is about for people who don't know what it's being remade from?
Sure. Now, this is a remake directed by Salim Akil, who was also in the same hotel that I was when we all got the news. He was in the lobby, and there's a huge crowd of people around him. And looking back, I should have realized that that was what kind of confirmed what was going on. But this is the story of three sisters who form a successful singing group, but then have to deal with all the things that come with that kind of success. So it's a lot of pressure from the fame, and then drug abuse, and all that kind of drama and things that go along with a lot of those types of movies. And it's sort of like, it's a little bit Supremes-esque.
Mm-hmm.
And what we can expect to see from this film, I think, is just a whole bunch of fantastic music and a lot of really amazing costumes and a lot of fun drama. This is going to be one of those, like, just delicious movies that, even if it's bad, it may be so bad it's good. I'm rooting for it personally because I feel like it's going to work on any level.
That's awesome. And I wanted to ask you as well, just sort of with that word, the comeback that we were talking about, it would have been interesting, and I guess this is all sort of theorizing right now, but it would have been interesting, I think, if her comeback would have happened because of movies or this movie instead of her singing, which is what everyone knows her for.
Yeah, and you know, her last single, it was huge. It was huge numbers-wise, but I don't think that it was in the collective consciousness in the same way that her huge hits were.
Right.
In fact, I'd have to look it up to even tell you exactly what the name of it was.
Million Dollar Bill?
And what's that?
Million Dollar Bill, the single?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, that one, and then there's
I Look to You, I think, was the other one.
Yeah, she never really seemed to, in all those Bobby Brown years, she never really seemed to have like a super strong hold in anyone's consciousness anymore. And I do think you're absolutely right. It would be ironic that her big comeback would be because of a film. But I think it's also just a testament to how multi-talented she is. She came from such a long life of study and entertaining. And, I mean, she could really do anything. She could do anything, apparently, except have better taste in men than Bobby Brown. Am I allowed to say things like that on the radio? I'm so mad. It feels good to get this out.
You are more than welcome to say that. And, you know, something I wanted to ask you to compare, and I need you to sort of bear with me because maybe this might be a strange comparison, but I wanted your thoughts on the fact that Madonna, who has, you know, obviously had supreme success in the world of pop music. Now, obviously cannot hold a candle vocally to Whitney, but has managed to do what she needs to do with the voice that she has and her talent with the dancing and all that sort of stuff. She has never been able to really translate her talent into acting, or into acting that people respect and want to see her in more movies. But then Whitney, who did have the powerful voice and, again, a very solid career in the pop world, did manage to translate into acting. Why do you think that is, and why do you think it hasn't worked for Madonna?
It's a good question. Madonna, I've always seen as more of an industry. Madonna is such a savvy business lady, as you can tell by her relevance in any artistic industry for decades. She's a real go-getter, that one. And I just think that she's just never been that good an actress. And that's a huge problem because she keeps, you know, she's fancying herself that. I think that somewhere in Hollywood, there are people who are telling singers that they will be good performers. They are not always right. Really, what they're looking to do is parlay their success from some other thing and use it to get them more money somewhere else. And I mean, that's just good business sense, but boy, do they miss the mark sometimes. Because, you know, Ludacris is actually another good example of a musical performer who actually translates really well onto the big screen. And whatever quality they have as actors, I mean, Ludacris, Whitney Houston, is it that they're softer? Is it that they're somehow more vulnerable, more relatable? I would hit on vulnerability as one thing that Madonna has never seemed.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that I think makes her a really good performer. Acting is one of the hardest things to do in the entertainment industry, hands down, because the better an actor I think a person is, and there are always exceptions to this rule, but I believe that there's a real softness and willingness to venture into the unknown with an actor, and they don't always know these people that they're portraying, and they sort of have to get acquainted with them. But to do that, they have to be honest and fearless, and they have to be they can't have a tough outer shell. And that's definitely the way I see Madonna. She seems like a real tough cookie to me. And maybe that's why she's a much better director than she is an actress. Because her film that is that's in wide release just recently, W.E., that won the Golden Globe for Best Song, that's not a bad movie. She's actually a pretty good director. And I think that's definitely where her success lies. I think that one of the things that's come with age for her is just the honesty of knowing your strengths. Okay. And I don't think, perhaps, I mean, without having any really knowledge to base this off of, perhaps Whitney wouldn't have been a good director. Right. Different strokes for different folks.
Right. Now, I wanted to bring this up as well. Again, you're living in Los Angeles. You were not far from the Beverly Hilton when all of this went down. What's the tone in the days following her death? Like, how are people reacting down in L.A. to Whitney, you know, no longer being with us, and then coming off these Grammy Awards?
Everybody is super depressed, and it's actually something that's always kind of happened in Los Angeles. It's that moment of honesty that is rare in this town. I actually just walked into a shop earlier this morning, and I was chatting with the salesperson behind the counter, and, you know, we kind of got to talking, and I actually mentioned it. And I said, I told this woman, this complete stranger, how surprised I am at how depressing this is. Because, I don't know her. I've never met Whitney Houston, but I still feel a real sense of loss. And she kind of stopped and she looked at me, and I for a minute, I almost backtracked and said, you know, maybe that was silly. And she goes, no, you know what? I've been really bummed out too. And that's the air around town. Because I'll tell you, near the Beverly Hilton on Saturday, it's people, you could definitely feel that something was going on in the air, for sure. And I think that after the Grammys and after such a powerful tribute that everyone paid to her at some point, whether it was on the red carpet or on stage, or if it was, you know, Jennifer Hudson's magnificent performance. But I think that it's definitely kind of radiating through the town today.
What was your take on LL Cool J? Because I just think, personally, he nailed the tone of how to host those Grammys coming off this incredibly tragic news.
Ladies do love Cool James, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
I love him. I just love LL Cool J. Talk about another actor who... He's so talented, he can do everything. It's like, save a little talent for the rest of us, LL. I think you're right. I think he set the tone, because in the times when I've had the just joy of being in his presence, he is so genuine, and he is such a kind soul. Like, there's a light about that man that is really attractive. And a lot of times, when I see these people who are famous for one reason or another, 9 times out of 10, I can absolutely tell why.
Mm-hmm.
LL is one of those, and I'm such a huge fan of his, and I agree. I think he did an amazing job last night of just kicking the whole thing off with class and love, just doing what he does best, which is laying it out, being honest, and also a little bit of that vulnerability. He is fantastic and a wonderful spokesperson for, you know, what we're all feeling.
And Greg, you know, as I let you go here, what do you say to movie fans of Whitney Houston? Do you encourage them to go see Sparkle when it comes out later this year?
Oh, my God. I encourage everybody to go see Sparkle when it comes out. It's going to be fun. Dress up for it. Have a good time. Maybe a cocktail beforehand. And while you're at it, go through the rest of her movies. Definitely go back and revisit those, because I haven't seen The Bodyguard in a long time, and I'm really curious as to whether or not it holds up. But I would really love for everybody to remember how much of an effect she had on our lives. Even if you wouldn't consider yourself a huge fan, she's such a part of our consciousness in this world that I think that that's a wonderful way to pay tribute to her.
Excellent. Gray, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your thoughts and your feelings and your memories and your expertise on Whitney. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Pleasure to be here. And thank you for asking me. It helps to talk.
Exactly. It definitely does. Well, that is Gray Drake, again, a movie critic for CNN and Fandango.com. Make sure to check her out.
Bring on the Remix.
Going out to my guests, Sean Cheeseman and Gray Drake. It definitely wasn't easy to talk about Whitney, especially because her death is still so fresh in our minds. But I think it was really important that we share these memories of her and basically enjoyed all the good things that she brought to our life. And it really is a tragic end to an awesome entertainer and, from all accounts, an awesome person. And on behalf of the entire Kelly Alexander Show team, our thoughts and prayers go out to her daughter, Bobby Christina, as well as her mother, Sissy Houston, the rest of her family, friends, and fans all around the world. And I was thinking about this, and basically, here's the hoping that she and her good friend, Michael Jackson, are hanging out together right now, making some really awesome music together.